everyone, and welcome to DeanNewman.org. We're starting something new today. We've occasionally done a podcast of our stories, but today we're beginning to every day. For those of you who would rather listen than read a print story, you'll have a chance to grab it in audible form, and you can do so from the same spot where you get the written form. There'll be a link there with the podcast of the day. It'll be the same story every day, every time we put something up, but it's going to be an audio version. It'll be nice for those of you especially who are driving and want to download a few, and while you're driving, take a listen to them. You'll be able to find them every time there's a new story. And let me just tell you now, if you want to make sure you never miss a story, you can scroll down to the front page of the website, dnewman.org. On the front right side, enter your email address, and anytime a new story goes up, you'll get a link that night, late that night, early in the morning, that will take you right to the story and take you right to the podcast, so you'll never miss a story. No advertising. We hold your email address very securely. No one else ever has access to it, just us here. We never try to sell you anything. This is just a site for information and news and opinion. So go ahead and enroll there, and you'll never miss a story, or at least an opportunity to listen or read everything that goes up at dnewman.org. Yesterday, the story began a look-see into the Justice Department of the United States and also the intelligence departments of the United States. And so we want to talk to you now about the yesterday story, corruption that's rampant in the judicial system. You know, if nothing else positive occurred during the first year of the Trump presidency, the almost daily revelations of corruption throughout Washington, D.C.'s political landscape were positive for almost all Americans. How so? Well, many of us for years have felt there is an underground government that has allowed and often facilitated power and unscrupulous and sometimes even illegal financial activities and political activities among those who serve in pretty much every capacity in the federal government. What else could possibly explain how over and over again we see and you hear and we watch as elected politicians go to D.C. as average middle-class Americans, but years later when they leave office, they leave worth tens of millions of bucks? How do you think that happens? Well, we'll look into that. With the public investigations of Hillary Clinton's illegal private email server during the 2016 campaign, other Clinton irregularities and operations of the Clinton Foundation, probable quid pro quo foreign contributions to the foundation while she was Secretary of State and then afterwards, the substance of all the elements of the Mueller investigation regarding Russian election collusion with the Trump campaign, evidence verifying those irregularities throughout Washington, they keep piling up. Every day we hear some new allegations, some more corruption. And, of course, those on the left try to slam Donald Trump every chance they get, and we just take it for granted. That's kind of the default position. It's dump Trump. That's what they're after. Well, all of this is confirming this underground or parallel system of government and the way it operates. If you remember a year ago, I told you about the Obama family, along with Valerie Jarrett, their official chief of staff, unofficial chief of staff. She was a long time, basically a family member, close friend, close political confidant of the president. They moved into a 9,000 square foot mansion just blocks away from the Capitol and are the first presidential family to remain in D.C. after leaving office. Why would Valerie Jarrett be there? And why would so much in the way of renovations and setting up office space in that mansion, why would that all occur unless there was going to be a concerted effort from there, from what we call the bunker, for getting involved or staying involved in the U.S. political system after the Obama two terms in office as president? And it looks like that has played out. Chief in these deep state operations scenario is the morphing of the institution that for 200 years, folks, has set the U.S. apart from every other country, and we're talking about the justice system. It's long been known that the system of justice established here in the United States at its founding has enabled our country to remain the world leader because of its fairness, its independence, and impartiality. You've heard the term all your life, freedom and justice for all. That's the way we function here in the U.S. as compared to some of the banana republic and other countries from the Caribbean, South America, Middle East. That fundamental of American democracy is now being challenged daily by those from the deep state. Who's in the deep state? You know, it's anybody's guess. I mean, you can look and listen and watch and look at all the political yuppity-ups from both sides, and this is not a Democrat or a Republican issue. This is a congressional issue. This is a former and current appointed position issue. Lots of people with all kinds of roots established throughout the Washington landscape are involved in the deep state. Well, in the next couple of days, we're going to break down the American justice system. We're going to look closely at how each segment of the Department of Justice and the intelligence agencies have been and still are under attack. These attacks have led to corruption at the highest levels of government. And this corruption machine has apparently been in operation for a decade or longer, but it's remained purposely hidden by deep state purveyors. We're just getting glimpses of it now like we've never seen before. Why is that? Well, Donald Trump entered his presidency as the most independent elected official in recent memory. And in his brash, no-nonsense manner, his Twitter, all of those things that a lot of people disagree with, has shown us just the tip of the deep state and its danger to our democracy. Today we're going to discuss the federal court system and how the deep state has corrupted many of those in it to purposely impact political operations in the U.S. for the benefit of others and themselves in the deep state. And then we're going to look at the American intelligence community and later the federal political system and how their interactions with each other has already dramatically changed our nation. Today, let's talk about the federal court system. You know, I've heard this word for a long time and I hate it. It's weaponization. I hate that term because it sounds so military. But events of the past 6 months or so have shown us that suspicions of the political use of the Department of Justice, the U.S. federal court system, intelligence agencies are not just suspicions. Folks, it's happened. Where did it begin? Well, we don't know where it originated. But in modern political history, the one that we're most concerned about now, intelligence DOJ weaponization, did not start at the FBI or the CIA or the NSA or any one of the other alphabet agencies. It began when that former constitutional law professor took his oath of office in 2008. We're talking about President Obama. Remember back on the campaign trail in 2008, he promised to fundamentally transform the United States of America. And he had 8 years to do it as president, and he delivered that promise on one front at least. He immediately began appointing liberal judges to federal courts to quickly and quietly begin the reshaping of the federal judiciary. The total number of Obama Article III judgeship nominees that were confirmed by the United States Senate, you're not going to believe this number. It's going to blow you away. 329, including two justices to the U.S. Supreme Court, 55 judges to the United States Courts of Appeal, 268 judges to the United States District Courts, and four judges to the United States Court of International Trade. That 329 lifetime federal judge appointments, lifetime. These are not serve a four-year term or a six-year term. A lifetime term for these 329 judges represents 40% of the total number of judges who serve in the federal court system in the United States. In terms of Article I courts, Obama made 8 appointments to the United States Tax Court, 3 appointments to the U.S. Court of Federal Claims, 3 appointments to the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, 2 appointments to the United States Court of Military Commission Review, and 2 appointments to the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Now, obviously, as he was leaving the White House, he had a plan to change these courts, and he changed all of them by putting liberal judges in these appointments. This was something that was very, obviously, very premeditated. He also elevated two chief judges of the Court of Federal Claims. On the Article IV territorial courts, he made two appointments and elevated one judge to the position of chief judge. Now, how that breaks out, so you know, Article III courts, they're also called Article III tribunals, or the U.S. Supreme Court, the inferior courts of the United States established by the U.S. Congress, which currently are the 13 United States Courts of Appeals, the 91 United States District Courts that includes the districts of D.C. and Puerto Rico, but it excludes three other territorial district courts, and the U.S. Court of International Trade. Article I tribunals include Article I courts. They're also called legislative courts set up by Congress to review agency decisions, military courts, marshals, appeal courts, ancillary courts with judges appointed by Article III appeals court judges, or administrative agencies and administrative law judges that are called ALJs. When Obama first stepped into the Oval Office as president, liberal judges controlled just one of the 13 circuits of the U.S. Court of Appeals. Just one. 55 successful presidential nominations later, liberal majorities took control of nine of those appeal benches, or 70%. 70% of the U.S. Court of Appeals, appointed by Obama, now control those powerful appeals courts. Outside of legal circles, the transformation of the influential federal appeals courts went largely unnoticed, however. Bet you didn't even know about this until today. The Supreme Court grabs the spotlight, but it hears fewer than 100 cases a year, Texas Supreme Court Justice Don Willett said, while the 13 federal courts of appeals handle about 35,000 cases. More than one-third of the 179 judges on federal appeals courts owe their seat to Obama. And Willett spoke about this in an interview with the Daily Signal. He said that's a legacy with a capital L, for sure. Obama also left his mark on the U.S. District Courts, which are the lower federal courts, successfully appointed 268 judges there, seven more than President George W. Bush appointed. Obama didn't push federal courts to the left by himself, though. Think about it. The Senate has to confirm any presidential judicial appointment. Some conservatives complain that Senate Republicans handed over the keys to the judiciary without a fight. These nominees can't be characterized as anything but radical liberals, and the senators knew that when they were voting, said Ken Cuccinelli, a former attorney general of Virginia, who's now president of the Senate Conservatives Fund, a political action committee. While there's no singular explanation for how the majority of federal appeals court judges flipped, Cuccinelli told the Daily Signal Senate Republicans adopted a strategy of knee-jerk surrender on nominees. I wonder where the deep state plays into all of this acquiescence by even conservative senators in all of those confirmation hearings. I don't have an answer for that. Something for us all to think about. Republican leadership balked at that characterization, though. They argued they spent most of their time engaged in guerrilla-style campaigns against an entrenched, determined Democrat majority. A Democrat president was in office for 8 years, most of that with a Democrat Senate, including several years of a filibuster-proof Democratic majority, a spokesman for Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told the Daily Signal. I got to be honest with you, that sounds a bit like a cop-out to me. There's no doubt President Trump inherited a decisively liberal federal judiciary. That fact was driven home with the court fights over the new president's temporary bans on immigration from certain countries, not all countries, that were implemented by executive order. You remember all this hoo-ha-ha. Appeals of those executive orders flooded appeals courts stacked with Obama-appointed judges, those courts of appeal we talked about, primarily that very famous, or should we say infamous, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals headquartered in San Francisco. Their actions exhibit exactly what a liberal weaponized judiciary can do and did. Though numerous constitutional scholars declare that presidential executive orders regarding immigration are constitutionally authorized for use by a president for the safety of the country, as these were, liberal judges, those Ninth Circuit court folks, circumvented their constitutional authority in issuing all those stays, and they handpicked some parts of those executive orders to leave in place, but they gutted them. They took all the teeth out of them. Decisions made by the Ninth Circuit Court, by the way, that find their way eventually to the U.S. Supreme Court, are almost always overturned. Think about that. The former president, Obama, he knew this would happen under any conservative president. Thus, he stacked federal courts as a liberal cause safety stop. And that's what Americans and this conservative president are having to deal with. Well, you may ask, how can this judiciary stacking be changed? Unfortunately, there's no wholesale possible cure. 329 appointed Obama judges received those lifetime appointments. Short of a congressional impeachment process, death, or retirement, as we said earlier, they're on the bench for a long time, most of them. The only way to make significant change there is to move the federal courts back to the middle. When I say middle, I'm talking about politically middle, not left, not right, not liberal, not conservative, but somewhere in between. That's where our forefathers felt they would consistently be when they structured their judicial system in the Constitution. That's for presidential appointments as seats in various courts become available through the rest of President Trump's term, whether it's 3 more years or 7 more years. It's important to note that just because a judge holds liberal or conservative views, that does not automatically make them a bad judge. We can't pile on all these judges. They've got to be looked at case by case and decision by decision. The significant problem with any judge, whether they're conservative or liberal, is if or when they begin to, from the bench, become legislators instead of judges. And we are seeing this happen a lot now. This is where the term activist judges came from. Those judges are those who feel their judicial obligation is not to just devise laws as various legislation entities are charged to do, but in the frequent absence of clear explanations for specifics within those laws, the judges decide to make legislative interpretation themselves rather than simply interpreting federal laws as they pertain to the U.S. Constitution. And you know what's happened is lawmakers have begun to slip with their responsibility and just not really work so hard in preparing laws that they debate and ultimately pass and a president signs into laws. They don't have a lot of information, of detail. They know that they'll end up in the courts. Somebody will sue. There'll be a judgment rendered. It'll get appealed. It'll go to one of these liberal appeals courts. And now these liberal judges who sit in these courts around the nation when hearing cases, they're prone to legislate their own philosophy about those laws rather than just sticking to the facts and forcing the legislatures, which these judges, these courts could do, send those laws back to the legislatures for clarification. Instead of doing that, they make their own determination. You'll probably remember this. Judge Neil Gorsuch last year in his Supreme Court confirmation hearing, when he asked a specific question about a specific law, when he was asked by a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he chided that senator by stating just what I said just a moment ago. Legislators would better serve voters in America by making laws that include specific terms, conditions, and policies that are clearly understandable. Doing so would stop much of the angst that results when cases from those vague laws end up in appeals courts. Well, it's doubtful that many felt like a Trump presidency was going to be easygoing, and boy, I'm sure you'll agree it hasn't been easygoing so far. One thing regarding judicial appointments by this president is clear, though. He has so far, and is expected to continue during his presidency, to appoint justices to various courts based on a rigid interpretation of the Constitution without referencing their own personal ideas or ideals in rendering their decisions. Originalist is the term used to describe that type of judge. The federal judiciary has certainly begun a slow swing back to the center politically. Thank God that President Trump initiated that swing back towards center. But it may be a generation, sadly, before the Obama major shift to the left can be corrected. Pundits say the U.S. is more liberal than conservative. But you know what? There is no absolute way to make such a determination. But what we saw in the 2016 election should be a fair comparison in determining how Americans feel politically. Both East and West Coast are comprised primarily of liberals, while the balance of the nation is decisively conservative. Knowing that the nation is close to evenly split in political thinking, which it is, you think about it, 60 million voted for Trump, 61 million voted for Hillary. Wouldn't it make sense to work to keep federal courts headed by judges similarly split? Now, federal judges don't run for office, so there's no campaigning. So we really don't know absolutely positively by asking them or them telling us if they lean conservative or if they lean politically to the left. The only way to look at it and come up with an answer is to look at their court decisions that they've handed down in their existing roles. It's absolutely un-American for a president to try to use the courts to push a political agenda like Obama initiated. You think about it, that's done in Venezuela, Cuba, Russia, other totalitarian nations, but not in the United States. This was a wake-up call for some of you. Some of you have thought this through. Some of you didn't have facts, but now you have the facts. We have a leaning left federal judiciary, and we've got to find ways to aggressively change it. The Senate, the U.S. Senate, confirms every federal judge. So what can you do? You can reach out to your senator. You can make sure that as these open judgeships come up, that your senator joins other senators with similar political preferences and determination of what a judge should do regarding exercising a verdict over something that bumps up against the U.S. Constitution. That's what they're supposed to do, and nothing more. That's going to do it for today's version of the podcast of dnewman.org. We discussed the judiciary and the corruption that's in the judicial system, what we stand and what we face, and some thoughts and ideas on how we can move out of it. I appreciate you joining us here. Again, a reminder, we're going to start putting a podcast up adjacent to every written story at dnewman.org. So you can just click on that link and you can download it. You can play it in your car. You can listen to it while you're sitting at home or whenever you want to do it if you don't want to read. Of course, you can do both too. I want to thank you again for joining us. Make sure you listen in and look in every day, www.dnewman.org. If it's not worth hearing about or reading, you're not going to see it or hear it here. Thanks so much for joining us. So long, everybody.